Welcome back to the second episode of Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies version 2019. I'm coming to you live from the year 2019 with my co-host, Philip Michaels.
Did you miss us? It's been a week.
Did you
say, oh, well, there was their episode for the year. Now they're just another filthy memory, and away they flit into the ether.
In the year 2525.
I look forward to if Matt is still alive.
They'll be listening to this podcast.
Yes.
We'll be on episode number 25.
But no, we actually recorded two episodes within a week of each other or thereabouts. So let's get to it. Don't say we never did nothing for you.
Let's get to it.
Yep.
The internet's only podcast where we preemptively review movies based solely on 2-minute trailers.
I'm sure that's not true, but we'll continue on as if that is the premise.
I maintain that fiction.
Okay.
All right. Tonight's theme is three clowns.
And a little lady.
You just stepped on a joke.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
It's okay, because the first trailer we're going to talk about is for the second installment of what is apparently now the It franchise.
Yes. Which I saw this morning. I was watching
Telemundo.
I was watching Telemundo because we cut cable because we're cheapskates and we weren't watching it that much. But I still like my sports, and I don't care if my sports are in English or in Spanish. So I was watching soccer.
Goal is the same in any language.
Yes, the universal language of goal. And I was watching the Chelsea match, and it immediately ended in disappointment, as all Chelsea matches will this year. And before I could even reach for the remote to turn off the TV, the trailer for It came on.
At 10 in the morning.
At 10 in the morning, as my daughter was in the room going, Daddy, the clown is scary.
Actually, to get back to, welcome to Phil and Lisa talk about their child as well, apparently. Yeah. Our daughter came home one day and said very matter-of-factly, I know what the purpose of clowns is. It's to sit in sewers and eat children.
Yep.
And we said, darling, how did you come?
Go on.
Is this based on firsthand observation? Mm-hmm. And she's like, no, I overheard my counselors talking about
it. Yes, at one of her summer camps, this was last year.
A couple of poorly supervised teenagers who were poorly supervising children.
We're talking about it. In front of 7-year-olds. And
so that was, our daughter now retains the impression that all clowns are but a sewer away from eating children.
Which is not a bad thing, an idea to raise her with.
Well, this morning certainly reinforced the idea. Anyway, the trailer came on. The casting looks fantastic. I like anything that Bill Hader is in, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of blows my mind that the dude who used to be on a horse for Old Spice is also in the movie, yes. Isaiah Mustafa. And James McAvoy comes back as well. He's the titular hero. James McAvoy is an interesting cat because I find that I can't not watch him, but because my first exposure to him was as Mr. Tumnus, where frankly he looks like he was focus grouped for sex offenders, it's kind of hard to shake that impression.
I have never really liked anything he's done. The movie that and I can't remember if I've talked about this before on this podcast, but the movie that he's in that I really can't abide is The Last King of Scotland.
Oh, that
which, don't get me wrong, Forrest Whitaker is incredible in that, but James McAvoy is the focus of the movie, and it's all, well, sure, Idi Amin is a terrible guy, but it's only terrible once he starts doing mean things to James McAvoy.
He plays interesting, complicated characters, and I find
his face weird, and I find his choices questionable.
Is this why you've never watched the X-Men movies with me?
Yes. Well, that's one of several reasons.
One of several reasons. I promise you, Michael Fassbender keeps it zipped up.
Mm-hmm. No gambit, though, as I recall.
And that
is there a gambit? Then there is no Phil.
Oh, I think that movie's now stuck in turnaround.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It, not you, honey. It gambit.
Well, surely not me, because if it were me, there would be gambit.
No, McAvoy makes Professor Xavier less of a saint and more of an interesting and incredibly flawed human being.
I understand that was the case in the otherwise flawed Dark Phoenix movie this summer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That whatever you might think of the character. It's very there's shades of dark and light and good and bad, and what are his motivations? Are they all good? Some of them aren't. I won't know because it's James McAvoy and it's an X-Men movie, so
I will make you watch one of these days. Your girlfriend Jennifer Lawrence is in them. So.
Oh well, then that's something entirely different.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's chapter two, because they're not calling it It Two, even more It. They're not calling it It's
well,
it, which could get them sued
it's
by
it, yes.
Ice cream company. Anyway,
It Two, this sounds like really bad grammar as well.
It, not you, It Two.
Did you ever see, you saw the 80s miniseries, right?
No.
You didn't?
No.
With John Ritter and Tim Reed and other
so
people?
So you forget that.
And Tim Curry.
Oh my God, no. So
hey, Georgie.
I had the Kill Your Television bumper sticker on my bedroom door until I was a senior in college, I think. I was one of those no-TV-watching snobs, like, from middle school on. So there is no way I would have seen it.
I would have thought that you would have given, like, special dispensation for...
No, because I was also the kind of pretentious teenager who was all, you can never make an adaptation that's as good as the book.
Oh, okay.
Which I was quickly disabused of with Last of the Mohicans, frankly.
Yeah.
But, no, I never saw it. To get back to this, because, again, the theme of the podcast is three clowns and a little lady. To get back to this, you know what? Congratulations to all these fine actors who got to exercise their fine instruments. I look forward to never seeing this.
It too.
Oh, it too. Yes, it's it. So that's a joke for you, San Franciscans. So that was our first clown themed trailer.
I would say that I enjoyed the miniseries, and I'm not a big horror guy.
No,
so
this is true. You're not.
So what can you do?
All right. Well, you can go find this miniseries. It's probably on YouTube.
It probably is somewhere.
Yeah. Probably on YouTube. The second trailer we're going to talk about is...
Joker.
Oh, God.
Let's talk about the Joker.
Oh, the reason we rushed through it, too, is because I have so much to say about this trailer for this movie.
Yeah. This is Joaquin Phoenix is your titular Joker.
Yeah.
And, thank God it's an origin story, because how many times have you said, oh, man,
That's what the comic book genre of movies is sort of lacking, are origin stories.
Yes.
I feel like we haven't gotten enough of those.
I really don't understand where these characters come from. The things that you like, let's find out how they became the things that you
so
like.
So I actually have let's start to take our critiques of the movie Quad, the trailer.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to ask you a bigger question about the state of comic book movies and the approaches thereof, okay?
Sure.
But I have to admit, I watched the trailer, and I admire how effortlessly it has incorporated and ripped off so many better movies.
Yep.
From Psycho with the teen mother-boy relationship to The Watchmen with the fact that they've basically set up the Joker's Rorschach to Taxi Driver with his increasing descent into psychosis into the mean night. Gotham is clearly a stand-in for that, the hellhole cinema 1970s New York City.
And complete with Bobby De Niro in a role in the movie.
And there's a sequence where he's going down the stairs performing and they're lighting up, and it is a dead ringer for a sequence that Gary Oldman does in Sid and Nancy. There were so many homages to much better movies in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, why would I bother watching this when I can go watch at least four other movies that are explicitly referenced in this trailer? And if I want to see a good Joaquin Phoenix movie, I'll watch her.
My problem with the movie, I don't think the Joker is the best Batman villain, let alone the best DC villain. To me, it's the Riddler. Make a Riddler movie.
Moreover, make a Riddler movie where instead of him being all, I love puns and things about sphinxes. Instead, you once posited the best origin story for the Riddler.
The Riddler, the Riddler movie I would make. And he's too old for the role now, but when we first talked about this 15 years ago...
When we had Don Cheadle cast as Batman, too, by the way.
Yes, we suggested Andre Brower would be a good Riddler, because the Riddler should be angry. The Riddler should be mad that
he should be so smart that he is simultaneously furious with the human race for being not as smart as he is, and then furious at himself for still wanting some sort of connection.
Yes. The Riddler should be the well-actually of villains. Mm-hmm. And an internet comic board come to life.
Oh my God.
And that would make him the greatest villain ever.
Mm-hmm.
The villain that you just, I want to see the Riddler die a horrible death.
Yeah, because the great thing about the Riddler, as you postulate him, is he doesn't understand people. He's too smart to understand people.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order for Batman to beat that Riddler, Batman would have to fully embrace what it means to be a human superhero.
Yeah.
Because as I've argued on other Incomparable podcasts, the greatest strength Batman brings to the DC universe, both in comics and in series, is that he's human. He's right. not endowed with powers that make him distant. He's basically embodying the best and the not so best of human nature.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I saw this trailer and I thought if I want to watch movies about dystopian 1970s hellholes, there are so many more I could watch.
Often made in the 1970s.
Yes, Martin Scorsese is responsible for at least one.
I think he's I think Scorsese has produced this or is involved in it in some way.
In his sleep?
The director is the guy who did the Hangover movies, which is my first choice whenever I want a villain origin story.
Well, what he should have done then is actually make the movie about Two-Face with Bradley Cooper's Two-Face.
Mm-hmm.
That's the movie I would actually like to see.
Cradley Booper.
Yeah. Yeah. But when I watched this trailer, and, you know, good for Joaquin Phoenix for being a fine actor. Again, it's the same reaction I have with it. But the reaction I had about this is, are we actually at a point where what we really need to see in cinema is the valorization of alienated, disenfranchised men who are angry that the world is failing to pat them on the back simply for existing?
No, if I needed that, I'd read the New York Times. We went to a diner and talked to this man in clown makeup about
you've been on Amazon to pre-order the Mark Halperin book. No, what I'm thinking is the reason that the Marvel movies took off when they did is because they were willing to say in the mid-80s, they were willing to say, hey, people are heroes when they engage with the world and say, why can't it be better?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is basically the question that gets asked in almost every single Marvel movie is, why can't it be better than it is? And what this Joker movie seems to be postulating and says, things are terrible. People turn terrible as a result of them. It's not their fault. They're going to go on to hurt people, and that's just too bad. Is that really where you want to hang your franchise?
I think it comes back to DC is the name of this conglomerate.
Yeah.
DC's tin ear when it comes to capturing the zeitgeist of the times. DC's all, times are tough. How can we make a buck off that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think your point is well taken.
What's kind of interesting is Amazon has a series called The Boys, which is based on the Garth Ennis comic series, the same name. Now, I love Garth Ennis. Preacher is one of my favorite comics.
Mm-hmm.
And Garth Ennis, however, tends to be hella violent. Like, he's weirdly thoughtful, but he's crazy violent and just goes for the shocker all the time. I mean, at one point they use like a baby that shoots lasers out of its eyes as like a key plot point. I'm not kidding. You should see the look on everyone's face. I wish you could. Like, maybe next year, if we actually get more podcasts up, we can pledge to send you photos of what Phil looks like when I tell these stories. Anyway, what makes The Boys...
I think I've had a stroke, and I'm hearing words, but I'm not able to...
Floor shimmishay.
Yes. Floor shimmishay.
But the whole point to the series, The Boys, mm-hmm. is that it's about, here's what happens when superheroes go corporate. And the casting in the series has been genius, because they've got a guy who's playing Homelander, who is your titular cross between Superman and Captain America. And he's played by Anthony Starr. And Anthony Starr is basically playing him as the answer to the question, what happens when you transplant a serial killer's personality into Captain America?
Mm-hmm.
And I kept thinking, this is probably what the DC movies have been going forward. This is what Zack Snyder wishes he could do with his, oh, it's grim and dark and I'm making statements. Like, they've managed to nail this in an 8-part TV series. But even then, they're still making the argument for the idea that things can be better. And you can question institutions and you can fight against them. You shouldn't just be like, that's the way it is. It's ground me down and now I put on makeup.
Again, I keep flashing back to a New York Times reporter meeting Pennywise and Joker in a diner outside of Toledo.
Yeah.
Down here, Georgie, jobs have left the city.
They had no choice but to amass an army of evil penguins.
Those city jobs are going and not coming back. Georgie.
I feel like Poison Ivy would be backing Marianne Williams.
I think that she probably would.
Yeah.
Yes, the strong environmental record and whatnot. Yes, I understand.
Oh, this is horrible. We're literally like two more sentences away from a BuzzFeed matching up like Batman villains and Democrat Party candidates for 2020.
Well, Sinestro would back Biden because it's really his time.
All right, so two clowns down.
Yeah.
One clown to go.
Yes, and the third clown is?
Little Women.
Oh, what? Louisa May Alcott.
Oh, my God, that's her theme music. No, the Little Women trailer dropped.
Little Women walking down the street. Little Women, the kind I like to meet. They're so superior.
So I want to rewind because... couple TV seasons ago, somebody had actually pitched a series that would run where it was Little Women, except set in dystopia post Second Civil War America, where the sisters.
Who did this?
Where the sisters.
What has gone on?
Where the sisters.
I'm floating and I taste egg salad.
No, I'm...
Babies shooting lasers from eyes in dystopia Louisa May Alcott.
Well, no, I...
In a world without little men, the little women reign.
I'm not making this up.
No, you are. No more lies.
Well, no, but it got me thinking about two things, yes. Which is one, every single film adaptation of Little Women is set in the period in which the original book was set. And
yeah. No, there's no...
Like, they've never managed... No one has ever said, Little Women, but Woodstock. Or Little Women, but Reagan's America. Like, no one ever does that.
One might argue.
Uh-huh.
And having not read the book... Mm. Because, you know, when you're a young teenage boy, you see a title that says Little Women and you go, hard pass. But from what I've seen of the various versions of Little Women, mm-hmm. Largely the Katharine Hepburn version from the 1930s, which I've described online as, well, we don't know really how movies should be made at this point. So we're just going to throw out there what sticks. But I think the Little Women book is very much a product of its time. The worldview, the attitude. So I'd be vaguely interested. Greta Gerwig
is doing it.
Greta Gerwig is directing this version. Mm-hmm. Director of Lady Bird. I think she's going to bring a modern sensibility to it while not changing the timing.
So two things. Mm-hmm. You kind of have to sift out Louisa May Alcott's horrific backstory. And her moralizing that she injects in her story from the basic story itself, which is basically about four women working against the strictures of a society that is arguably already dystopic. I mean, we think about the Civil War and it's all sepia tones and Ken Burns documentaries, mm-hmm. but if you are living in a country that is riven by civil war with uncertain supply lines anywhere, uncertain communications, like one of your closest relatives is off doing God knows what, you have no idea if you're even going to have a country or what's going to happen if your country falls. That's dystopia. That is like the actual definition of dystopia. And I feel like that always gets played down, which is why I was actually 100% on board with the idea of like 21st century dystopia Little Women. Because I thought, well, this is a great way to actually reframe the horror of war.
Steven Spielberg's Ready Player Women.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, this time they recast the Go-Go's when Meg, Joe, Amy, and Beth open fire on the...
V for Vendetta of Little Women.
But Little Women is colored very strongly by the fact that Louisa May Alcott had to work to support her family because her father couldn't be bothered.
Right.
He was like a fruitarian type of guy who, like...
Oh, my goodness.
Like, no, Phil, he was, like, staggeringly self-involved even among transcendentalists.
She
like, that's a high bar to clear, but he managed.
She wrote smut, did she not? Or am I confusing her with someone else?
She wrote fairly lurid serials. I don't know if she actually wrote, like, erotica?
No, but the smut of its day, as it were.
But there's a reason. So with Little Women itself, what I've always found, and I've read it countless times because nerd.
Yeah.
And
also women.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Also was a little woman at the time. Mm-hmm. There's always a film version of Little Women for every generation because there was...
The Katharine Hepburn version in the 1930s. There was a version in the 1990s with...
There was a TV version in the 1980s with Eve Plum as Beth.
Oh, holy God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone's all Meg, Meg, Meg.
Oh, no, totally.
Yeah.
The only Beths had expired from peak. And, you know, you had Winona Ryder as your Joan.
That was the 1990s. Was the Susan Sarandon version.
Yeah, and now you've got, you can basically track your age by whether or not the actress in your cohort is playing Jo, Marmee, or Aunt March. I mean, that these are like the three stages of womankind
there.
I'm super excited about this film, actually, because I do think, especially with the way Greta Gerwig, the way they cut the trailer, it emphasizes that these girls burn to be recognized for their own accomplishments, that they have a sense of identity that's tied up in who they are and the internal worlds of creation they have. Amy with her painting, Jo with her writing. Mm-hmm. And despite the fact that Amy's a witch who should have been cast into a pond.
Yes. Why don't you share with the listeners
burned the manuscript.
Why don't you share with the listeners your very strong feelings about how Little Women should pan out?
No.
As I learned when we watched the Katharine Hepburn version, which I could not get through.
No, it was hilarious watching you tap out of that one.
Yeah, that was
anyway,
that was a slog.
Despite the fact that I, like lots of other nerdy writerly girls, thinks that, you know, again, Amy should have been crucified in an inverse and then hung in a pit of pitch for burning Jo's manuscript. What I did like about this is that it points out that she had artistic aspirations too, and it sets up a couple of the core tensions that, like, Greta Gerwig has managed to tease out the core tensions in the book in a way that frames them well for a 21st century audience. Because one of the big conflicts in the book was always, is it more virtuous for a woman to build a home and support her man? Or is it more virtuous for her to follow the creative spark that forms the sense of her identity? Which is better? And then the other one that comes out between Jo and Amy is not simply the witch burned my manuscript, but rather Jo is an idealist through and through, and she's going to support herself, by gum, and she's not going to take help, and she's going to flout all of the rules that are deeply unfair and that she never asked to uphold. And Amy is just a stone cold pragmatist.
Mm-hmm.
Because Amy's the youngest sister in a family of four girls. And she's all, look, you know, art is nice, but we can't all be writing lurid serials here. And I appreciate that in the trailer, those conflicts are brought to the fore right away.
These are very intelligent comments about a movie.
Uh-huh.
My one takeaway is that Saoirse Ronan is in it.
Saoirse Ronan, yeah.
I don't know how you get the pronunciation of that name out of that spelling.
Uh-huh.
And that will always bother me about her as an actress. She is the Worcester, Massachusetts of actresses.
Yeah,
your name should not be pronounced that way. It's spelled this way, young lady.
I think a nation of angry Irish people would have, like, to have a word with you about
it. Well, they
they're all named Aoife and Oyen and...
direct your emails to Lisa.
Well, yeah, no, you know, our niece has never read Little Women.
Well, that's appalling.
Yeah. No, I was...
She's a little woman.
I was under the impression that it was like a rite of American girlhood, is that you read the book and then you're like... You know, before there was Sex in the City, with are you a Samantha or whatever? Like, are you Meg? Are you Jo? Are you Amy? Or do you nope out early as Beth?
I guess the dude equivalent would be Jack London's stories.
Probably, yeah. I remember reading Call of the Wild in third grade and enjoying it immensely.
Yeah. Call of the Wild, White Fang, yeah. Or the Sea Wolf for the deep cuts.
Yeah, but no, I'm kind of excited about this movie. The thing I'm super curious about is I want to see how they handle Joe eventually marrying that crusty old German professor who's like, well, no, okay, so.
Who's playing the crusty old German professor in this,
okay,
in this version?
His name is Louis Garrel.
Okay.
And he looks like somebody who would deeply disapprove of you writing serials to support your family.
Wow.
I mean, just the picture of him on IMDb.
We're looking now at his IMDb picture. That is an angry-looking man.
Yeah. And so here's my... Let me paint the picture. So most of the Little Women books, because they're actually two volumes. There's Little Women, and then in England, the second half was published as a book called Good Wives. Mm-hmm. And through most of it, the whole premise is that Joe and Laurie... who's being played by the dreamy Timothy Oil of Olay.
From Beautiful Boy and
Chalamet.
Call Me By Your Name, was
yes,
it?
Yes, yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah. There's a peach involved in that somehow. Any hoodle, if he plays Laurie, and he's very good at pining after Joe, and they have many, many tempestuous scenes in this trailer. And in the book, it's evident that Joe and Laurie encourage each other to dream, and they bring out the biggest and the best and the most noble of feelings in each other. And the thing is, Louisa May Alcott kept getting letters talking about how people couldn't wait for Joe and Laurie to get together, and, oh my God, you gotta get them together. Why are you delaying? Why are you doing this? And so out of pure writerly perversity, she's like, I'm not paying them off, which is why she marries him off to Amy, right?
Yeah, right.
And but since it's the 1880s and the dictates of the day are like, well, you can't have a happy single woman at the end of a novel. That's just crazy talk. They have to pair off Joe with somebody. And so she gets paired off with crusty old Professor Bear, who's like this single dad and a professor and noble. And apparently, like, it's never even really explained in the book. Like, you can tell that Louisa May Alcott was like a lifelong spinster who never saw the point in settling down, because she cannot write a convincing, like a convincing functional courtship to save her life. And it is never more apparent than it is whenever she writes about Professor Bear. And you're like, why on earth is Joe attracted to him? Like, the biological clock is plot contrivance? What? Like, it's one of the big failings of the book. And the problem is, when you have source material that is this incomprehensible, the screenwriters have to find a way to make a silk purse out of the sow's ear, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what they usually do is they cast really hot actors.
Sure.
As Professor Bear. Like, in the 1990s version, it's peak Gabriel Byrne. It is Miller's crossing era Gabriel Byrne.
Yeah.
So, like, it completely makes sense that you'd throw over callow young Christian Bale for Gabriel Byrne. You're like, every woman who's what was like, mm-hmm, I get it. But I have always felt that this is akin to like that scene in Poltergeist where Craig T. Nelson screams, you moved the headstones, but you didn't move the bodies. Like, you can make the actor really hot. That doesn't change the fact that the romance is entirely implausible and this dude is incomprehensible. So it's entirely possible that this incredibly disapproving looking guy who's playing Professor Bear now will turn out to like make sense, because Greta Gerwig will have read the same book and been like, I don't know. That said, he's not in the trailer.
So I'm smirking because I'm looking at the cast list and I notice Florence Pugh plays Amy. So I'm hoping for like a Midsummer type take on Little Women, or more appropriately, a Fighting with My Family meets Little Women type situation.
She also plays Cordelia in King Lear.
Exactly. So it works on many levels.
Yeah.
She
has primal screams all the way
through. There is lots of punching and or ritualistic murders, I'm good with Little Women.
I was in my lady text chat with girlfriends as we were breaking down the trailer and talking casting. And of course there's the whole, we don't get this Professor Bear, we hope we do someday thing.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my genius friends will remain anonymous because I haven't asked these people if I can talk about this yet. I was like, well, what about if it was the really hot guy from Girls? And I was like, Adam Driver? And she's like, yeah, him. And so, like, what has been on my brain in the loop for the last few days is, it's Kylo Ren as Professor Bear. And, like, he hunts down Amy and uses the Force to, like, sink her into a pond because she burned Joe's manuscript a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, oh, I would swoon over that. Which, that says a lot about me, and none of it is good.
Sure.
Anyway.
So that's three clowns.
Three clowns and four little women.
Yes, all of them desperate.
Three clowns and four little women, Phil. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to the second half of our podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the half where we talk about what movies have we seen this week?
Well, why don't you lead us off since you actually darkened the door of a movie theater. Okay.
All right. So don't judge me. We had a terrible heat wave this week. And you can judge me for this part, which is that it got into the high 90s here. I have to explain. We live in a town off the San Francisco Bay. It's normally very cool and temperate. And none of the houses have air conditioning. So,
well, you only need it like 10 days of the year.
Oh, but those 10 days are brutal.
But the 10 days that you need it, you really need it. So.
And so one day this week, we had to entertain our daughter because she's not yet back in school. And I took the day off. And I was like, let's just go to the movies because, God, my brain is melting. And unfortunately, the only really kid-friendly thing that was playing
was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And boy, she really loved that scene with the Manson murders.
No. Angry Birds 2.
Angry Birds 2. You might have been better off taking her to the Tarantino picture.
Well, like, this was actually the big surprise.
Uh-huh.
Is, first of all, there's a short that runs before Angry Birds 2 called Hair Love that I ended up just sobbing my way through. And the short, which is written and directed by Matthew A. Cherry, who's got a deep bench of credits work. And the short is about a little black girl who's trying hard to do her hair. And you see her watching a YouTube tutorials where a woman is doing a little girl's hair. And so, you know, you establish right off the bat, there's no woman, this girl's trying to do her own hair. Her dad comes in, and there's some very funny physical comedies. He tries to tame his daughter's hair. And then eventually they watch the YouTube video, they get the hair done, and then they go and pick up the star of the YouTube videos, who is the little girl's mom and the man's wife, mm-hmm. from the hospital where she's bald because she's been fighting cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And boom, that's your story. And...
That's entertainment.
Well, presumably she's okay because you see her hair growing out through the credits.
I see.
But I'm sobbing. I am sobbing because it's like bow levels of family love and trials and tribulation and feeling. And my daughter's
The short that appeared before Incredibles 2.
Oh, God. Yeah, yeah. That was amazing. That one, I was sobbing in my seat over that one, too. It was just, oh, my God, she loves him so much. And now her love is invisible. Yeah, no, it was like that.
So, yeah, you know, nobody cried for that Frozen trailer that appeared before.
Oh my God, people were angry.
Coco. But no one cried. This is the point. So maybe more of that, more of the snowman singing songs.
So anyway, maybe it's because I had a lot of goodwill going into Angry Birds 2.
Mm-hmm.
What I was not expecting was how the whole thing is basically, the whole movie is basically about how the angry birds and the pigs have to team up to defeat a vicious police state that wants all their resources and is helmed by eagles with a highly militaristic culture.
Mm.
And at the end of it, there's someone like explicitly says, we're stronger when we stand together. We can help each other out and we all remain great that way.
Welcome to the resistance, angry birds.
Oh my God, no. Well, and like, the more I'm looking at it, the more I'm like, because the pigs are, like, technologically advanced, and they're hedonists, and they're elitists, mm-hmm. and they really love food, mm-hmm. and meanwhile, the birds are all really community and family-oriented, and they get really anxious if they're not needed or they feel obsolete, and I'm like, did they just make, like, a red America, blue America parallel in here? Am I maybe reading too much news to read into this? But, like, I was actually surprised that the kids' movie had something to say. Like, between this and Descendants 3, like, kid movies got woke this year.
Yeah.
Or at least kid movies got woke in 2017 when they were being produced.
Exactly.
And they're hitting now. So we came out, and my daughter's like, that was actually not bad. She's like, I laughed at several points. And she's citing running jokes. And then...
To the point, she's actually talked about this more after mm-hmm. she's seen it than Toy Story 4, which she also saw this summer.
Mm-hmm.
Which I wouldn't necessarily say, well, obviously, then Angry Birds 2 is much better than Toy Story 4. But it landed with her.
I think she liked being able to identify the running jokes.
Yeah.
And to watch the jokes develop.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that she liked that because another part of the Angry Birds 2 movie is how the one guy from like Red America, which is basically Bird America, keeps, I have to be the hero, I have to do XYZ, and over the course of the movie, of course, he learns you can't do it alone. Moreover, he learns to step down because it's the girl bird's turn to run the show and right. solve the problems. And again, I'm just like, who? And did they focus group this on, like, the Mother Jones audience? Like, what the hell? Because it's like there's a lot of messages in that very strongly suggest one or more people on the Angry Birds 2 writing staff had some things to get off their chest. they also ruthlessly send up nerd culture points, too. So there's a lot going on. But anyway.
So not as terrible as you might imagine.
No.
A sequel about a movie about a video game that peaked 8 years ago.
Yeah, no, like it's this is like peak weirdness when you think about it. Because as you said, this is a sequel to a movie that is based on a video game that peaked nearly a decade ago.
Yeah.
So this is where we are now. We're being told by birds and pigs to put aside our differences so we can smite the militaristic eagles that want to destroy us all to maintain their way of life.
Yeah.
Tiffany Haddish is one of the voice talents in the movie, and the thing is after having watched Lego Movie 2, like, she's not what you'd call the most versatile.
No, she does her bit.
She does her thing, and she does it well, I want to emphasize.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I spent a lot of, there's Tiffany Haddish, there's Leslie Jones, there's Bill. It was basically like an SNL.
We recently watched the Gilbert Gottfried documentary on Hulu, and again, this is a guy who has carved out his area for the past 20, 30 years.
And that's what he does.
Yeah. And that's what he does. And he's quite good at it. But
so anyway, if you're in the mood to see whether or not you can actually bring political metaphor to a video game movie, Angry Birds 2 is not the worst of your options. And I would encourage going to see it for Hair Love. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just a really... It's... The animation style actually reminds me a whole lot of what they're doing over on the She-Ra show at Netflix. Mm. The music is great. The expressions are fantastic. It's just really, really nice to see little family stories like that. I highly recommend that. So we saw that this week. Mm-hmm. And then you and I...
We watched Beckett, which is 1964. It's... Peter O'Toole is Henry II. Richard Burton is Thomas Beckett. Mm-hmm. And it's 1964.
So it's
basically a two-hander of a movie in which it's the relationship of these two guys. Thomas Beckett has his spiritual apophysis.
Mm-hmm.
It's a movie I really like, although this time around I really... found the staginess of it to be off-putting.
So I think of this movie as kind of a trilogy because there's Beckett and then there's A Man for All Seasons, which came out 2 years later and basically tackles tackles Sir Thomas More, who's a couple Henrys down the line. But then you have The Line of Winter, which is the late 1960s, where Peter O'Toole returns to play Henry II again. Mm-hmm. And my big problem with all movies made about British history in the 1960s is they are so visually flat. Like, and I don't know how much of it is a limitation of the technology, and I don't know how much of it is the director's bias towards modernism. Because remember, modernism got to full swing in the 1950s or like... It was a post-war modernism aesthetic and the space age, and so there was a real trend towards commercial culture that was very, very streamlined. Everything from autos to fashion to home decor to graphics and abstraction, and there's a lot of emphasis on clean and unfussy lines. And if you remember, a lot of public works projects through the 1960s have brutalist architecture as a result of that impulse to move away from the fussy, decorated pre-war look, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is when you're making movies in a time period when ornamentation told you everything about people's belief systems and social statuses, like, it's just ugly. Like, and this movie Beckett is just visually unappealing. There's no elegance to any of the staging whatsoever.
No.
And
or in terms of the camera work or anything.
And when you have someone like Peter O'Toole, who was one of the most beautiful actors of his generation.
Right.
And you manage to make him look fairly dingy, you've done something wrong.
Although one could argue that it's the, what century? The 12th century, 13th century? To make people look handsome in that era.
No, but part of the point to being a king, because again, to hop forward a bunch of Henrys, one of the reasons Henry VIII got away with as much as he did for as long as he did was he was incredibly handsome as a young man.
Sure.
And you have to also remember that from the perspective of people living in these times, physical beauty was often considered to be a reflection of God's favor on you or a reflection of your character as you understood and worshipped your God.
Mm-hmm.
So to have somebody like Peter O'Toole, who would be playing a king, who is ruling by divine right, but to have him in violent conflict with the clergy, which reserved for themselves the idea that, no, they were actually, they had the hotline to God. Like, that should be the crux of the movie. And it should, physical beauty should play a part, because you should be able to look at the king and go, wow, he's hot, except he's completely terrible. Or even to look at, to look at Becket and be like, oh, as he grows more certain in his spiritual awakening and his moral fortitude, he gets more attractive. Like, they could have gone that direction too, and they don't. Instead, Richard Burton looks like an unhappy baby in vestments. And
he may well look like that. I think the reason to watch this movie is Richard Burton's performance. Yeah. I think it's one of the best of his career.
Yeah.
For an actor who sometimes, let's be charitable and say, mailed it in.
Yeah.
I think he really,
he actually brings it.
He brings it in this one and Spy Who Came In From the Cold are probably the two movies you should watch if you want to figure out what the deal is with Richard Burton.
Yeah.
He's quite good in this, understated, although that's sort of helped out by the fact that he's guarding against Peter O'Toole, who talks like this. Oh, I'm cold.
See, I
think... Lisa, help me.
Now you're playing Jack Lemmon in The Great Race.
That's true. A little bit of that.
I think you've actually encapsulated one of the central conflicts of the acting styles here, which is that Peter O'Toole, when he plays a king, like, there's no doubt as to it. Like, he feels as if he is owed every scintilla of attention. And it's interesting because, again, he comes back to play Henry II in The Lion in Winter, like, 6 years later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or rather, he films it 5 or 6 years later. And the physicality of that performance
is quite different.
And the way he interacts and shares the screen with other people is very, very different. So it goes to show you the power of a good director. What I found distracting about watching it this time, and this is like the third time I've seen the film. The first time I watched it in high school, because we did a lot of work on this in AP English, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But the first time, I didn't notice how virulent the misogyny was.
It's quite misogynistic.
Like, I didn't like, when I was a 17-year-old, the fact that the playwright and then the scriptwriter later chose to imply that there was no point in ever talking to a woman because they had no moral authority whatsoever and they couldn't possibly comprehend, like, the concerns of kings. Like, that's just staggeringly hostile, especially the way that these women are written, because they're written as exacerbating all of the king's worst tendencies. And it's heavily applied that if he would just stay away from women, he could be reasoned with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's awful to have to parse something that hostile and try to appreciate the rest of the movie around that.
No, I grant you that.
Mm-hmm. So. And then as a palate cleanser, I watched Kung Fu Hustle again,
because
I love the sequence of that movie.
That's a good one.
Yeah. And from there, I slid into a Kung Fu wormhole from which I hope to never return.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Watched Master Ip, too.
That's a good one.
Donnie Yen is just, it is incomprehensible.
Who we would know from?
We would know him from Rogue One.
Okay.
As the blind believer in the Force. And I understand from a cursory Google search that he was like, it's a little bit mystic kung fu. I was hoping it wouldn't be. But if you don't know kung fu, you'll know Donnie Yen from the Star Wars franchise. I ended up watching Ip Man because I actually, you know, fell into a wormhole with Kung Fu Hustle. With I liked this actor, this actor, this actor. Where else can I see them? And the one I really wanted to see more of was, I'm going to mispronounce this. His name is spelled X-I-N-G, so I think...
Jin Yu is how I pronounce that.
Jin Yu. He's a 32nd generation Shaolin monk. And his work in Kung Fu Hustle was beautiful. His work here is beautiful. He's, of course, killed in the second reel. Mm-hmm. Anyway, if you want a palate, weirdly enough, if you want a palate cleanser from virulent Western misogyny, Kung Fu movies do it for me.
Okay.
So, the next time we do this podcast, I'll have watched another 5 or 6 and I'll have more to say.
I'm sure that you will. Yeah. And I'll probably have watched more problematic movies. None of which are Little Women.
No.
Because the hell with that noise.
Again, I think the Little Women movie, I'm going to look at this one because Greta Gerwig, and I like her directing.
Yeah, she's good.
But I really think the Little Women movies, I want to see the central themes and conflicts and story of Little Women set in different periods in American history. I'd love to see Little Women set during World War II. I'd love to see Little Women set
during World War II. It will be.
I'd love to see Little Women set now where Reverend What's-His-Face, Reverend March is off in the Gulf.
It will be interesting to see how... Mm-hmm. How resonant this version is with the current tenor of the times.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Well, every generation gets the Little Women it deserves.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah.
And the Joker it deserves, so God help us all.
Well, I'm looking forward to the crossover, the Joker versus Joe March.
I'm going to burn your manuscript, Joe March.
It's on now. Yeah. Okay, I think that's wrapped it up for now, Phil.
I think that has.
I have some kung fu to watch.
Yes, you do.
All right, this has been...
Yes.
Another episode.
What?
Yes.
Who?
Babies with lasers shooting out of their eyes,
no, Phil. I don't know what you're talking about.
Do you taste the egg salad?
Yep.
It's been
Phil. Copper!
This is Phil.
My left arm! Arm!
Phil and Lisa have risen.
No! Oh, I'm Philip Michaels. I'm okay.
Phil and Lisa have risen.
Please don't.
Movies.
Please don't call 911.
Call 911. I'm in terrible health. Oh my God, Philip. This is Phil and Lisa. We're in the movies. Good night.
Goodbye forever.